Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston, and we are getting you set for the draft lottery. The first time the Grizzlies have been in the draft lottery in some time. You got to go all the way back to 2010 to find the last draft lottery for the Grizzlies. So some of you guys might be a little rusty in your lottery preparations, and that's why I've asked a lot of you to tell me, and I'll continue to ask here on this podcast. Let me know what you're doing to prepare for it. I've already heard from a lot of you that your preparation involves a great deal of alcohol, and I will just say consume responsibly. The gentleman who tweeted me and suggested that you drink four beers for every spot the Grizzlies drop, or just drink all 12 at once if the Grizzlies get the number one pick. I salute you, sir. You may end up in the hospital, but God bless you for trying. The rest of you do not try that, but you, my friend, go for it. So we're going to talk a little bit about the history of the lottery in general, and we'll talk about the Grizzlies' history as well, and kind of get set for what should be. I mean, really and truly, it's a bunch of like, I mean, all the pomp and circumstance is a 30-minute show for what is essentially revealing a list that was done an hour prior in the back. It's incredible how much entertainment they're able to wring from this with the introduction of the representatives, including Elliot Perry. Representing the Grizzlies, along with Courtney Love, the 8th grader from Grizzlies Prep. It's a great story. I wish them well. But the lottery, of course, it's interesting how it's all come about in the NBA and the whole point of it. You know, the idea was always to create a system that would benefit the worst teams and allow them the opportunity to draft, but also to not make it quite so obvious as it is, like, for example, in the NFL, where, you know, worst team gets first pick. There's no lottery system. It's just the inverse order of your finish. That's how you pick. You know, they didn't want it to be quite so beneficial for teams to lose. Again, you inadvertently create different sorts of incentives by whatever system that you choose to employ. And in this case, for the first 20 years or so, from 1966 through 1984, the two teams that each finished with the worst record in a conference, so your Eastern Conference, Western Conference, your worst teams would flip a coin, and whichever team won that coin flip, they would draft first, the other team would draft second, and everyone else would pick in inverse order of the one-loss records. What an interesting approach that would be. Imagine the fight to the very bottom of each of the conferences in order to participate in that 50-50 shot at the number one pick. But 1984 was the last time they did that. In 1985, that was the Patrick Ewing draft, the very first draft lottery, which was simply the old lottery, pulling the envelope out, and whoever won, won. You threw out all the teams that were in that lottery. That's when David Stern picked the envelope that had the New York Knicks, the envelope that is purported to have been frozen so that it would be cold, and then he would pick that one. Because that did not go especially well, the draft was very quickly, within a year, procedurally changed again, which meant that the lottery was only for the first three teams and made sure that no team would finish last. Because initially, in that playoff, you know, the frozen envelope thing and the odds being what they were, it didn't matter where you finished. You weren't in the playoffs. You were in the lottery. You could have gone, you know, 1, 2, 10, or I guess 8, or however many there were at that point in the non-lottery. I think there were 8. So you could have finished with the 8th pick even if you had the worst record, because there was no weighting in the odds or anything like that. It was just back there. And so they changed that. They still didn't weight the odds in 1989, or in 1986 rather. But they then said, okay, you know what, let's make it just for the first three teams. And then after that, it's whatever your record is. So at least we don't punish teams too badly from other teams jumping over them in the lottery. So, and that's kind of the way it is. It's remained that way to this day. The worst record in the league finishes no worse than fourth. The Grizzlies with the second worst record, no worse than fifth, and so on. But of course, we've refined it even further since then quite a bit. Back in 1989, when you saw, you know, some further expansion that allowed for 11 teams to jump into the lottery because of the expansion, they started to tweak the system with ratios and percentages and that kind of thing, and they weighted it. So the team with the worst record during the regular season received 11 chances at the top pick. They didn't do the ping pong balls or anything quite like that. It was a little simpler, but they did do those chances. So you had 11 chances at the first pick if you were the 11th or were the worst team, 10 chances if you were the second, and so on. So it was 11 out of 66 chances. It's a 1 in 6 chance for you to get that top pick. And that was sort of the beginning of the slide towards what we've turned this thing into. Then in 1994, they bumped up the chances a little bit because in a 1 in 6 chance, it's about a 17% chance. Now it went to 25%, which is where it remains today. They decreased the chances of those lower picks to where they kind of stand now, which is really, you know, if you're 9 and on down, it's pretty tough for you to win. And they went with the ping pong ball record combination thing that we've started to see here. Then they've obviously tweaked that a little bit and changed it based on the number of teams that have been in this process. But there are, you know, the end result is still pretty much the same, because even though they've tweaked it here and there, and they added a little bit in 2004 because they had to increase to one more team, so they had to tweak the percentages there. It really was 1989 or 1993 where you saw the biggest change, and the one that has been pretty much in place with some changes here or there to this day. It will change next year. We'll get to that in a second. There are 1,001 possible combinations when those four balls are drawn, numbered 1 through 14. That it doesn't matter what order they are picked in. That's one of the things that you may be curious about. It doesn't matter what order they're picked in. It's just whatever numbers come out is whatever numbers come out. And they are assigned, you know, pretty much in order. So, for example, if you see, you can go and look, and I think the Celtics, Mike Zarin has done some really good work with the Celtics. He's got a great visualizer that I retweeted, and you can check out, that really gives you an idea of all the percentages and the likelihood of each team getting picks. The Celtics usually publish all of the combinations, the exact combinations, who's got what. And what's interesting is that because they do it in order, generally, if you get a number 1 anywhere in there, it's going to be a Phoenix Suns pick. It's going to be the team with the best chance. If you get a number 2, usually that's Phoenix or, in this case, Memphis. So the lower numbers, the only time you see the teams that are really down in the lottery end up getting those picks are if it's just a bunch of like double digit numbers. If it's like 10, 12, 11, 13 or something like that, then you know that's going to be one of those very unusual teams. Otherwise, if you see any low numbers, chances are that's going to involve, you know, one of the teams that's most likely going to get there, which is a little bit of an easy way to at least watch it. If you were able to watch it at the time, you'd be able to kind of see exactly what was going on. Now, you won't be able to watch it at the time, because only a select few are able to do that. They have this, if you haven't seen it before, it is essentially a hopper, just like you would see for a lottery or Powerball or whatever. And they put the numbers in there. They swirl them around. It is certified by an accounting firm. They're the ones who actually run the lottery itself. So it's not the NBA that does it. It's an outside firm that does it for the NBA to make sure that there's no shenanigans. It's done in public, behind the scenes, in this case in Chicago, usually in Secaucus, but they've moved it this year to Chicago. It'll be done in that back room with representatives from each team present. Chris Wallace will be the one for the Grizzlies who is present in the back room, actually watching this go on. When you go into this room, there are journalists as well who are allowed to go back there to make sure that there's no weird stuff, to make sure there's impartial observers, and to write about it, obviously, later on. When you go back there, you will see it is as close to a sterile, clean, no communication, cutoff room as possible. There is all of your communication devices, whether it's a phone or a watch or whatever, everything that you have that you could use to communicate with the outside world is confiscated. You are not allowed to communicate with anyone who is not in that room. And the drawing takes place about an hour before the telecast, and then you kind of have to sit there. Can you imagine that? You know, if you're a huge winner, you know, if you're one of these teams way down low and you jump up miraculously, if you're Charlotte or the Clippers or Denver or whatever, and you jump up, you can't tell anyone. You can't do it. So, or if on the flip side, you fall and three teams jump over you, in case of Memphis, you also can't share that with anyone either. You have to sit there and stew for an hour or so until the actual broadcast is done. And part of me wishes that they would put that on TV, but then you realize it's incredibly boring to watch. And the NBA does, to their credit, put the video up later on, usually that night of the lottery. So tomorrow night you'll see it and you can watch it happen. I've seen it happen and it is boring because you just see kind of the picks go up. And a lot of times, you know, the first, let's say Phoenix wins the lottery, they may get three or four straight drawings where it's them. You have to redraw it again. And if a duplicate team comes up, you have to redraw, which takes a while. That's why they can't do it live, but they do have to do it and go through all of that process to make sure that it's legitimate. So when that's done, then the NBA will put the teams in the envelopes, go out, do the ceremony, and everyone will find out exactly what will happen. But what about the Grizzlies? What have they done in their lottery history? The Memphis Grizzlies have had, and I guess I'll count 2001. Technically, they were the Vancouver Grizzlies at that point, but they were really picking for Memphis. So that would be 7 lottery trips. This will be number 8. And in those 7 trips, the Grizzlies have dropped 4 times, jumped up twice, and stayed the same once. So they are 2-4-1, essentially, if you want to look at it like that. The furthest they dropped was 2007, one of the drafts where you'd really want to stay up high. They were first overall, 25% chance to win the lottery. Instead, they dropped to 4th. That was the Mike Conley draft. I guess, interestingly enough, the best draft pick that they've probably made and that has stayed with the team. But that was the year that Durant went before him. And I mean, you know the story. It's Greg Oden. Probably would have taken Oden and screwed that up anyway. But that was the big drop. They had a couple of years where they dropped 1, 2008 and 2002. They ended up with, in 2008, that was the year they drafted Kevin Love, but really it was a draft day trade for O.J. Mayo that was involved in that. Drew Gooden was picked in the 2002 draft and was foolishly, I don't know what the Grizzlies were thinking, trying to play him as a small forward and didn't really work and ends up leaving somewhat unceremoniously. 2001, they drafted Shane Battier after going into the draft with a 4th position and ended up drafting 6th. Of course, that was the year they traded for Pau Gasol as well. And that turned out to be a heck of a draft pick. And I guess the strange thing is when they have jumped up, well, I'll get to that in a second. The last time they were in the lottery was 2010. They were expected to pick 12th. They did pick 12th, and they picked Xavier Henry, and that was obviously not great. The 2 years they bumped up, 2009 and 2003. 2009 was Hasheem Thabeet. Oh, boy. Oh, God. As my man Chase Lucas says, those who do not remember history are condemned to Thabeet it, which I think is something that should be written up on the Grizzlies draft board and on the draft walls and all over. They should never, ever go through the same process that ended up getting them Thabeet again, and chances are, well, who knows? They might. I hope they don't. That was an abject disaster, but people forget that that was the year they were actually, you know, a 24-win team, and were slated to be in the 6th spot prior to the lottery, but jumped all the way up to 2 for that. Sad. Same thing is true in 2003. They were slated to be in the 6th spot and jumped up, and this was the most painful thing imaginable for the Grizzlies, for Grizzlies fans at the time, Grizzlies fans that can go back and think about it. It was horrifying. I imagine a lot of you know the story. Some of you may not, but this was 2003. Yeah, Darko, obviously that didn't work out so well, but I mean, you had a power-packed group, and it was an incredible draft situation. And the Grizzlies were sitting there and going into that with the 6th best chance, but when the show was on, you know, Jerry West is sweating it out. You see the 6th pick come and go, and there's no Grizzlies. That means he's moved up. But let's remember what the stakes really were in this situation. Because you have to flash back 6 years, August of 1997, when Stu Jackson, then Vancouver Grizzlies GM, decides to trade for Pistons malcontent Otis Thorpe, who had openly said he didn't want to play in Vancouver, a team that was just 2 years old at the time and not showing any signs of being good anytime soon. Players who, you know, went there were befuddled by the town, befuddled by the monetary situation, the tax situation. It was not a popular place in Vancouver. It's not nearly as big and as continental and whatever, high class as Toronto. So people didn't really like it. Wasn't really much of a fit. And Thorpe didn't want to go, but Stu Jackson traded a first-round pick anyway, a pick that had continually sliding protections. And those protections had hit every year from that point on. Now, the postscript on this is Otis Thorpe would only play 47 games for the Grizzlies, would be traded the next trade deadline. So February of 1998, he was traded for Michael Smith. He was traded for Bobby Hurley. The Grizzlies also got Michael Smith in that deal. Michael Smith, one of my favorite quotes that I was reading this and going back and going down memory lane. One of my favorite quotes from a player acquired by a team. Smith said, I put it like this. It's a job and it helps pay my bills, take care of my kids. It really doesn't matter where I go as long as I play basketball. What a tremendous quote that is. I mean, that's outstanding. That's a guy that hates his job and hates his life at that point. Stu Jackson at the time referred to Otis Thorpe and said, I don't think we're ever going to get to where we want to be without taking calculated risks. Sometimes you have the right idea, but you have the wrong personalities. In this case, it wasn't a match. You're damn right it wasn't a match. The only match was lit by Stu Jackson as he blew up the Grizzlies at that point. But we wouldn't find out about how bad it would be until the Grizzlies had already moved from Vancouver to Memphis, and we sit at this lottery situation. The protections falling to the point where it is a top one protected pick. Either the Grizzlies get the number one pick, LeBron James, now certainly the greatest player of his generation and one of the greatest in the history of the game, or they get nothing. That is as big a coin flip 50-50 deal as you could possibly imagine. Just think how much different life would be in Memphis if you had LeBron James, at least for that first, you know, whatever 8 years that he would be, that first contract and then that you know, the restricted free agent deal. You'd have him for that long. He may still have gone to Miami, probably would have. So whatever. You would have had what would that have done for the city, for the team, the whole thing? It's just incredible to think about. Incredible. But you know the story. Cavs got the number one pick, as they seem to do a lot in the draft lottery. And the Grizzlies got nothing and stayed bad for a while. Now, they with a little flirtation in the playoffs, got in the playoffs 3 straight years, didn't win a single game. But there you go. This Cavs team, incidentally, has a real knack for jumping up and sneaking in to the lottery situation. They have a real knack for it. They've won 3 lotteries. Would have won 4 lotteries, but for the coin flip that they did not win back in 2012. But that slot won it. So you're talking about a team that would have been, I mean, they have incredible luck. Dan Gilbert's son, 2 straight lottery wins in 2013 and 2014. Of course, the one that we just talked about. They are lurking down with Brooklyn's pick. It makes you very nervous to think about because, you know, they're sitting right there in that spot that they like to be in, the 8th spot. You know, they jumped up from 9th in 2014. Keep an eye on it. They have a knack for winning these things. And one of the few that has jumped up 8 spots. They jumped up 8 spots that year to win the last time that they had an opportunity to be in the lottery. They're not in the lottery technically. Technically, it's Brooklyn, but they certainly will end up getting the pick. So what do the Grizzlies look like from a percentage standpoint now? You know, what are the odds? Well, you know, this is one of those things that's going to change actually over the course of the next year. This is the final time that we will see the draft lottery odds be what they are. But the Grizzlies, for those that don't know, have a 19.9% chance of winning the lottery. That's the second best opportunity. Suns have the best opportunity with 25%. But again, you know, it's one of those things where it's so spread out that it still is 3 in 4 chance that the Suns don't get the pick. There's a 4 in 5 chance the Grizzlies don't get the number one pick. It's really trying to get that top three pick and to make sure that you minimize your downside. That's the big advantage. And in this case, the Grizzlies have a 56% chance of ending up with a top three pick. The Suns have a 64% chance of ending up with a top three pick. There's a big jump there. The Hawks and the Mavericks each with a 42.5% chance of finishing with a top three pick. Mavs have a tiny fractional advantage over the Hawks in the number one pick. They got one more combination because they finished with the same record. And then jumping off from there, the Magic go down to a 29% chance of a top three pick and a 9% chance of winning the draft overall. The Bulls, 18% chance, and the Kings as well. They tied also with the record, so they both have 18% chances and a 5% chance of the number one pick. And there's that Cavs pick, a 3% chance of jumping up, 10% chance in the top three, but you never know. The other one's very, very small indeed. So that's where we stand right now. I'd love to know what you're going to do. We'll talk more tomorrow about the actual names and picks, and we'll start to get into some of that because, you know, right now it's kind of a wait and see. You've got some ideas, got some mock drafts. Lord knows I've been doing my research, but until there's an actual, you know, situation that crops up where you know, okay, this is exactly where they're going to pick, it's kind of foolish to really go on and start worrying about a draft trade or mock draft or anything like that. It's just kind of foolishness without knowing exactly where the order is going to be. We'll have more of that coming up tomorrow on the show. Also, a little bit of news. It looks like David Fizdale is going to have Keith Smart and Nick Van Exel, at least from the existing Grizzly staff, join him up in New York. JB Bickerstaff has already assembled at least part of his staff. I don't think it's been officially announced, but Chad Forcier is coming to be the lead assistant, and he'll have a couple more spots at least that he's going to have to fill. It's not surprising. You know, Fizdale brought those guys in. That is pretty customary for guys to follow the coach around, so it's not a shock that you would see those guys be lost, but that is it's something that JB Bickerstaff obviously is going to have to start to look at and keep an eye on it. I'm sure he's got a short list of guys that he wants to bring in. But, you know, assistants, it's an important part of things. And you see now with guys like Dwayne Casey getting fired over the weekend and two or three of his assistants in the mix. We've seen assistant coaches from lots of different teams have opportunities to jump up. I mean, obviously, you know, the Mike Budenholzers and Brett Browns of the world that came from the Spurs staff. You could add James Borrego to that list, who is now part of things from his staff joining the Hornets as their head coach. It's just part of the gig. So assistants are very important, finding the right guy. And you see, like, for example, in New Orleans, you know, they went out and got Chris Finch from Denver, who was their offensive mind and really bumped up their ability to play, really bumped up their movement, the offensive ability they had. They had some tremendous, tremendous growth and great years for a lot of their guys, Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis, Boogie Cousins before he got hurt, Rondo. It can make a big difference. You find the right guys, you find the right fit, you find an assistant that can really tweak some things and unlock part of your team. That's kind of why I think the hire of Chad Forcier is such a underrated good hire for the Grizzlies, because you know, he's a guy that is good at developing young talent. Well, the Grizzlies have young players. I'm not sure how talented they are, but whatever they've got, you've got to develop it from within. That is what he does. So assistants are very, very important for your team's growth. Let me know what you think. At Peter Edmiston on Twitter. You can follow me there. I obviously will be on pins and needles, the edge of my seat for the draft lottery coming up.